Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, you always bring some interesting topics to talk about. Tell us.
Yes, vitamin C, does it really reduce the risk of stroke? We're going to discuss some interesting research that was presented at the American Academy of Neurology. Mm-hmm. And mammograms, are they worthwhile? We'll discuss the study that has raised a lot of controversy.
Been in the news. A lot of people have weighed in. I'm looking forward to your thoughts and our recipe, a guest chef recipe.
Yes, buttermilk brine chicken. It is a slow cooker recipe from a dynamite slow cooker cookbook.
Mm-hmm, that's coming up. 800-462-7413. And our first call, Zorba, a listener with us in Texarkana, Texas. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
I have mountain cedar allergies. Do you know of anything that will relieve the symptoms?
What kind of allergies?
Mountain cedar.
Mountain cedar. So you mean the tree itself gives you allergies?
I guess so. I tried spending one winter near San Antonio, Texas, and found out I have mountain cedar allergies.
So what did you have? Your eyes itch or your nose is running?
Yes,
what was going on?
Yes, burned and a slight sore throat.
Now, how do you know it's from the mountain cedar rather than some other thing?
Well, because it's so common down there. And I went into a pharmacy.
Yeah.
And all they had to say was, you poor guy.
Well, that's not a lot of good advice, is it, you poor guy?
No, and I called two different VA hospitals.
Uh-huh.
I'm enrolled with the VA.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing.
Same thing. They said, you poor guy.
But there's just nothing you can do about it. My son got on the internet.
Okay.
And we didn't find any.
You didn't find anything.
No.
But at least the internet didn't say, you poor guy.
Right.
Didn't give you that feedback. Well, first of all, allergies are common issues. And quite interesting, a lot of people from the Midwest moved to the South. They didn't move to San Antonio. Some of them did. But a lot of them moved to Phoenix and Tucson to get away from the allergies. And they planted wonderful trees and flowers. And 20 years later, they ended up getting the same the allergies to what they planted. And so these are pollens that are in the air that our body reacts to. And mountain cedar allergy is pretty much the same as a lot of other allergies in that we treat them, with a few different things. So first of all, they're antihistamines. Now, one recommendation I have is at bedtime, if you can tolerate it, 25 to 50 milligrams of Benadryl at bedtime. 25 to 50 milligrams. Benadryl is great, but it causes sleepiness, which is why it's in almost every over-the-counter sleeper pill has Benadryl in it. So most people do not tolerate it during the day. During the day, what I would try is a non-sedating antihistamine. Allegra, Zyrtec, or Claritin, generic, is always as good as the name brand. If one pill doesn't work, double the dose. All of them are very safe, and sometimes doubling the dose will work. If it's a nose problem, a steroid nose spray by prescription from your doctor works. If it's an eye problem, an eye drop. And for some people, maybe such as yourself who have severe allergies, they need all of them. You need the eye drop, the nose spray, and the pills. And that's what I would do. I would try those. Have you tried any antihistamine nose sprays or eye drops?
No.
You see, you stopped at the poor guy.
Well, wait a minute, though. I have had blepharitis and used eye drops then, but when I had the blepharitis problems, I was not down there in Texas.
Well, and this is a different, this is an anti-inflammatory eye drop, and there's several drops in the class. So what I would recommend in that particular class, what I would recommend if you're going to go back down to Texas is before you go there, you see your doc where you're living, and you tell your doc, the antihistamines you can buy without a prescription, but tell your doc you want a prescription eye drop and a prescription nasal spray, and then you can enjoy the warm weather of San Antonio all winter long.
Well, I know what that doctor will say. He'll say, oh, you poor guy.
Oh, thank you so much for your call.
Thanks. We appreciate it. That poor guy. 800-462-7413, our toll-free.
Ah, the ethics of medicine, right?
1-800-462-7413. And we stay in Texas, Zorba. A listener with us now in El Paso. Hi.
Hi. How you doing, Tom?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, just before Thanksgiving, I was reading the paper, and all of a sudden, my vision turned pink. And I stopped reading the paper, and after a while, it cleared up. So I went to my glaucoma specialist, and then I went to my retina specialist, and both looked and said, well, it's not bleeding. There's no tear. There's nothing in the retina. But they don't give me any cause for the pink, and it's been happening periodically during the day.
Hmm.
So I'm wondering if Dr. Zorba knows any reason why vision would turn pink.
So when you're just looking at something and all of a sudden the thing looks pink?
When I'm looking at something, kind of focusing on something. It could be putting toothpaste on a toothbrush. It could be buying a shoelace. And frankly, you know, looking at the world, pinky is not all it's cracked up to be.
Yes, you know, we don't usually have the phrase, you see the world through pink-colored glasses. That is it. Are you on any medicines at all?
I'm taking drops for glaucoma.
Okay.
Dorzolamide and Lumigan.
Okay. Any pills that you're taking that you're for blood pressure or anything else?
Right. Atenolol and Lisinopril.
Okay, so Atenolol, Lisinopril, good blood pressure pills. Okay, now here's another question. Do you take Viagra, Cialis, or Levitra?
No.
Okay, because those can produce eye changes that are sparkly changes in the eye because they actually change the retina, and that's one of the side effects is people will see flashing lights, white lights can turn blue. I don't know if they can turn pink, but I know that they can turn blue and off color, and that can be a side effect from it. So, you know, sometimes it's stump the doctor.
Oh, and this is one of those.
And this is one of the times that I have no idea. I mean, they look the right way. They were looking for pressure in the eye that would do it. A retina specialist is going to look and see whether or not your retina is actually being squeezed, whether you have a detached retina, because that can produce eye changes too. And then there are things that occur in medicine that are difficult to figure out. But I am going to give you one other thought. Because it may not be in the eye, and it might be in the brain. So the only thought that I would have is you may be having seizure-like activity in the lobe, essentially, that is affecting your eyesight and producing this pink. And one thing that I found very interesting, I recently got back from a Mayo Clinic meeting in Florida. Wonderful meeting, great. They do great meetings. They were discussing temporal lobe epilepsy and how it is much more common than we think, and it is common to have its onset when we're older, and it produces strange behaviors that often can't be explained and turn out to be temporal lobe epilepsy. And so the only thought I would have is that you may be having small seizure-like activity within your brain that is causing this pinkness. And so next thing I would do is check it with a neurologist.
Okay. That sounds like good advice.
Yeah,
thank you.
I think it is.
Thank you.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because epilepsy can produce strange behaviors. Yeah. It can be stroke-like, behavior-like, tick-like. I had a patient who periodically would be sitting there and would swear. This is when he was an adult. It was not tic de la rue. And he would swear, and he didn't know that he was swearing at the time. And it turned out he had hit temporal lobe epilepsy.
Our caller, of course, was going to an eye doctor for his glaucoma.
Right.
And
right.
So it's not surprising that you wouldn't know what this was if the eye doctor didn't know what this
was. Right,
but
as I thought about it, it might be a neurological.
Yeah,
certainly is worth pursuing for him.
Absolutely. 800-462-7413. So, Zorba, for a lot of years now, you've been kind of poo-pooing vitamin C, suggesting that study after study after study has shown that vitamin C really doesn't do anything. Does this new one change your mind at all?
No. Doesn't change. Well, but
tell,
it's interesting.
Tell us why. Tell
us about
it.
So, first of all, let's look at it. It's, okay, it's research presented at a meeting. Okay, so in other words, they presented research at a meeting. So it's not research published in the journal Lancet, JAMA, New England Journal of Medicine.
I get
so it.
It
hasn't necessarily been peer-reviewed. Somebody got up at a meeting and said this was the research. So we've got to look at that.
And what is the
research? The research is they looked at vitamin C deficiency. Now, that's different than taking vitamin C, and I'll explain why. They looked at 65 people who experienced a stroke. They looked at the vitamin C level. They found out that 45% of the patients had a normal vitamin C level, and 45% had a depleted vitamin C level, and about 14% had a level so low that they were considered to be deficient. So when they looked at the data, they found out it was more likely that they had hemorrhagic stroke in this study because their vitamin C level was deficient. Okay. So, one study, 65 people, not refereed, presented at a conference.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it's reported in the newspaper as if it's the gospel, you know, as if it's been refereed and it's a huge study of thousands of people. But within the media, both of these studies are looked at as equal. Well, look, vitamin C prevents stroke and mammograms don't work, when in fact, they are totally different in terms of their, in terms of what they're doing. Now, vitamin C deficiency implies to me that there are people who may not be eating right.
Yeah.
And we know that having adequate fruits and vegetables, such as, i.e., the Mediterranean diet, reduces stroke and heart attack by 30%. So this just may be a marker for poor eating habits.
Yeah, if we're eating the right stuff, we've got enough vitamin C.
We should not be vitamin C deficient. No, not at all. I mean, unless we have something weird going on. So maybe these people are eating wrong. But it's reported in the newspapers, hey, take your vitamin C and you'll prevent a stroke. So you've got another industrialized product to swallow.
Yeah.
And so I don't swallow this research.
800. Got it.
And I got it. Got it. In the trash.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. On we go, Zorba. A listener joins in now in Green Cove Springs, Florida. Hi.
Hey, Tom. How, Dr. Zorba, how you doing?
Pretty good. How can we help?
Doc, I get a really obnoxious odor, and it's in my nose. It's not me this time, Tom. I've checked. I get this obnoxious odor, and it's not like all day, every day, three, four times a week. Yesterday, it happened like twice. Generally, if I'm bent over doing something, tying a shoe, picking something up, working in a cupboard, getting something, you know, out of a cupboard, if you're down there for more than 30 seconds, and you get a really funky, I think they call it post-nasal drip back in the commercials. Really a terrible taste from it.
Uh-huh. Do you smoke?
Yes.
That's it. It's not that simple, but that's ultimately it. So what happens is the smoke is affecting your receptors in the back of your nose. Often smoke will then produce a chronic post-nasal drip, sort of like a sinusitis type drip that goes in the back of the nose. And for some people, that is experienced as an awful odor. And so the smoke is causing inflammation. And there are a couple of things you can do. So first of all, you can quit smoking. So we know that. I won't go through the plus and the minus of that because you know that. Anyone who smokes, who doesn't know they shouldn't smoke, has had their head in the soil. So we don't think about that. But there are things that you can do. First of all, a nasal wash may help, a neti pot. Mm-hmm. And we'll put that on our website, zorbapastor.org. We'll put a little YouTube connection to a video for a neti pot. Something called Sinew Cleanse. You can also use it to spray. And sometimes just a little saline in the back of the nose will do the trick. And if that doesn't work, sometimes a steroid nasal spray that we use for allergies will clear it up. So I'd initially try the sinus cleansing because it's not a pharmaceutical and your nose may do well. And if not, I would try that. And of course, like I said, the real issue is obviously to cut down, either quit or cut down as much as you can. But that's what I think it's from. I think it's from receptors in the back of your nose that are just being inflamed from the smoke. What do you do for a living?
I'm retired, actually. I was a carpenter for many years.
Uh-huh. Do you still carpenter on the side? You know, do you still?
Oh, yeah. I live on a sailboat.
Okay.
And there's always plenty to do.
Oh, sailboat. Isn't that what they say? Isn't it you could just stand in the shower and tear up $5 bills?
Yeah. A boat is a hole in the water you throw money in.
I love it.
It's something you got to love. We're here on the beautiful St. John's River. And it's about 74, 75.
Sounds wonderful. We'll keep up the good work. When you're working with wood, wear a mask so it doesn't get into the back of the nose if you're sawing wood. That would be the other thing I would say. Good luck. Enjoy the weather. And thanks for sharing that with us, especially. We love it when
thank you. I've enjoyed the show a long time. Tom, thank you. Doc, see y'all later.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for the call. Before the break, Zorba, let's log into the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and take a quick question from Tom about improving memory and brain function. Tom asks, Dear Zorba.
Now, you're not the Tom. It's another Tom.
There are other Toms.
Oh, I really didn't know that. Tom was such a unique name.
I know. You hardly ever run into a Tom. Dear Zorba, I'm a computer programmer by trade and have recently considered taking the health of my brain head on. At work, I often have so much on my mind that I forget simple things like taking out the trash or plugging in my cell phone at night. I took ginkgo biloba for just over a month, and I did not notice any change, so I stopped. Are there any other things I can do to improve the capacity, accuracy, or longevity of my brain function? But don't worry, if I get smarter, I won't let it go to my head.
Go to my head. So in other words, this person can program, but they can't remember to take out the garbage.
Yeah.
It's pretty typical. You know, the absent-minded professor of, one shoe on, one shoe off. You know, that's pretty typical. They're paying more attention to other things.
I wonder if this is a memory or just, I don't want to take out the garbage.
I think it's more likely the latter. I have to remember to eat that chocolate cake that I left in the refrigerator. I bet you would remember it.
Plugging in the cell phone at night. That's.
Well, the reality is this. The reality is to remember those things that don't take a lot. We tend to ritualize things.
Yeah.
So I put my keys in one place. Don't you, in your house? Where do you put your keys?
In my pocket.
Oh, you leave it in your pocket. What if, have you ever not put your keys in your pocket?
Almost never.
Yeah, but when it happens, what you feel like you lost your keys, right?
No, I can't get in the house. and I'm just coming out of the hot tub.
That actually happened. Oh, I'm just coming out of the hot tub.
I'm locked out.
And you're locked out of the house? Oh, my God.
You know
OMG.
What? There was a raincoat hanging on the porch that I could put on.
Yes.
I was this dirty old man in a raincoat. Knocking on a neighbor's door.
Now that is a memorable email.
Anyway, getting back to Tom.
Ritualize your stuff. You know something? It's hard to answer
hard
a question.
Hard to get rid of that image, isn't it?
That's right. I got the vision. I'm right there with you, Tom. There he is, walking down the street. Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
Thanks for
now,
sharing
that. Now, on to our email. Here.
Ritualize what you're doing. That's how you do it. You just ritualize it. Otherwise, I forget things all the time, and I do a lot. And those things that I tend to forget are the things I don't care about, frankly, most of them.
Okay, don't forget, if you have a question for the good doctor, just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. And don't forget, Facebook.
We have our recipe coming up from a guest chef. You'll want to stay tuned for that. Lots more of your calls, of course, some more interesting research to talk over. And, of course, our medical myth buster, too, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again, 1-800-462-7413. Callers are waiting, but we have an open line now for you. But before our next call, recipe time. And this week we have a special guest author joining in on the fun. Today's guest chef is very unique in that her recipes can all be prepared using a slow cooker. Chef Stephanie O'Day is the author of the new cookbook, 365 Slow Cooker Suppers. She's a New York Times bestselling author who's been featured on Good Morning America and Rachel Ray, and she joins us today to share with us her delicious recipe for buttermilk brined chicken. Welcome to the show, Stephanie. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Okay, tell us about how you got into these slow cooker recipes.
You know, I want to point out that while you introduced me as a chef, I am not a chef. I am a mom of three, and I play in the kitchen in my fuzzy slippers with a slew of slow cookers. I have 14 in the house, but I am certainly not professionally trained.
You have 14 slow cookers in your house?
Yes. And a very patient husband who understands that they live in the linen closet and they live under the bed.
That's really funny. And I think being a mom and doing all that qualifies you for the term chef. I don't think chef means you have to go into the Culinary Institute of America. I think 365 slow cooker suppers, I would say.
I would say that qualifies.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you very much. I have had more fun with this than I ever possibly could have imagined. It is, it's science in the kitchen, and I am fortunate enough that I now have this palate that I can go to a restaurant and taste something and sort of try and deconstruct it and figure out how they did that. And then we also happen to have gluten allergies, and because of that, some of the food and restaurants are off limits. We just can't have them. And so I like to try and recreate things at home. I call it takeout, fake out. And this buttermilk brined chicken is similar to that. I had read a few different recipes for it, and they were called for battering the chicken in a buttermilk brine. And I knew that we couldn't batter it and fry it, and especially it wouldn't work in a slow cooker. But we can get the nice, juicy, moist flesh from a buttermilk brined chicken at home in your very own slow cooker.
Now, how long have you been doing the slow cooking?
I received my first slow cooker as a newlywed. I was 21, 22 years old, and I still have that one. But I really got excited in 2008, and I was newly out of work. I had a baby at the time who was sick, and I needed to stay home with her. And later we realized it's because she had celiac, which is a gluten intolerance.
Right.
But because of that, I was a little bored, and I decided to make a New Year's resolution to use my slow cooker every day for a year and write about it on the internet. And right around Valentine's Day of that year, I discovered that I could make a perfect creme brulee in the slow cooker. And I used it as a bain-marie. I put a little bit of water on the bottom, and it just steamed perfectly in this water bath. And I got uber excited, and I broke pretty much all email etiquette rules, and I emailed the Rachel Ray Show and told them how awesome I was, and I rocked, and I should be on their show. And surprise, surprise, they responded. And after that show aired, I received some offers for cookbooks. And since then, that has turned into my full-time job of playing with my crockpots and recipe testing.
It sounds wonderful. I happen to love creme brulee. I'll have to make it. I will definitely have to make it.
Very well.
I will definitely make it. So, well, congratulations. So let's go on to the recipe. It's buttermilk brined chicken. So you start out with 1 4-pound roaster cleaned. And do you leave the skin on or take it off?
I personally take it off, and a lot of that comes because I'm kind of a crazy California hippie, and growing up, my mom had us skin everything, and so I just grew up that way. And I've also found that in a slow cooker, since the chicken cooks pretty much in its own juices, it stays moist without the skin, and so I prefer to just remove that extra layer of
fat. Gotcha. So some people do that, and that's, of course, where a lot of the fat is. 2 cups of buttermilk. and put in there. 2 cups of packed dark brown sugar. Could you use light brown sugar, or dark brown just has more flavor for this?
Probably either is fine. It's, it's actually 1/4 cup. So
it's just 1/4 cup.
Yes, a little bit. The dark brown also creates a nice kind of caramel color to the chicken, which is another reason why I chose that as well.
Got you. A tablespoonful plus a teaspoon of paprika. What paprika do you use? There's good paprika, and then there's paprika that my mother used to use that is sort of fake paprika. So where do you get your paprika?
I get it at my local grocery store, and I just get the regular McCormick brand paprika. I do have smoked paprika. I do have a spicy paprika, but this is just the regular $3.50 bottle of paprika.
Got you. A tablespoonful of garlic powder, 1.5 teaspoons of kosher salt, 1.5 teaspoons of ground black pepper, and maybe some hot cooked wild rice pilaf for serving. That sounds good. So let's make the recipe. So use a 6-quart slow cooker. Now, Tommy had an interesting point. Do you find any what differences there are in slow cookers, one versus another, and you know, does it make a difference?
Sure. You know, I've tested all of the different makes and models, and what I would suggest for home use is to get what's called a smart pot or a programmable slow cooker, and that way, when your cooking time has elapsed, it will flip over to a warm setting
and
keep your food hot and ready. So if your recipe calls to cook on low for 6 hours, but you're at work and out of the house for 10 hours, that's okay because the pot will flip to the warm setting and keep your food hot and ready until you return home.
Yeah. And I, by the way, think that's very important. And I'll tell you why. Because of my slow cooker, I gave the slow cooker away that my wife and I got for our wedding present 38 years ago and gave it to my daughter who now uses it. And that's those slow cookers were on and off the crock pot.
Yes.
And I just bought a programmable one, and that's just what it does. It keeps it, you know, does it for a certain number of hours. So that is really good.
Yes.
So in a large zippered plastic bag or covered bowl, combine the chicken with buttermilk, sugar, tablespoonful of paprika, and the garlic powder with a teaspoon of salt and pepper. Seal it well, refrigerate it for 1 to 2 days so it gets in there. Remove the chicken from the bag and discard the marinade. But you keep the marinade that's on the chicken, so the chicken is wet when you put it in the crock pot. Okay, so that's important. Place the chicken into the insert breast side down. Sprinkle the remaining paprika and salt. So breast side down, you find, is better for this?
It keeps the breast nice and moist, and because you're not actually adding extra liquid to the pot, the chicken has soaked it up like a sponge for the last day or so in the refrigerator. And so it's nice and moist, and then it just keeps your breast meat really juicy. One of the differences between my recipes and kind of the old school slow cooker recipes is they used to have you drown your meat in liquid, and it used to be thought that the liquid needed to simmer around the meat in order for it to cook. And I found that that's just simply not the case. The newer pots heat nice and evenly, and they seal so well that all of the steam and condensation remains in the pot, and you don't need to add lots and lots of liquid for your meat or your vegetables.
Yeah. And I actually think you bring up a good point, because when I think of the old slow cooker recipes, they were always very liquidy.
Yes.
So we sprinkle the remaining paprika, salt, and pepper on top. Cook on low for 7 hours or on high for 4 hours. Check the temperature of the thermometer to make sure the internal temperature was 165. And bon appetit. And I did make this recipe, and it is delicious. I loved it.
Oh, I'm so glad.
I'm so glad.
You'll find that even without the additional liquid added, you'll have a nice amount of gravy left in the bottom of the pot. And you can use that. You can thicken it to make a gravy, or you can use that liquid to cook rice in for an absolutely gorgeous side dish.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much. Great book, 365 Slow Cooker Recipes. Thank you so much. Love the recipe, and we'll be putting this on our website.
Thanks for joining us, Stephanie.
Thank you very much.
To get a copy of today's recipe or to find out more about Stephanie O'Day's latest book, 365 Slow Cooker Suppers, visit our website at
zorbapastor.org. And remember, When you're there, you can see pictures of Tom and me and look at all of our other recipes that are on there that are archived at ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, we're all over Facebook.
To the phones we go now, Zorba, at 1-800-462-7413. Welcoming a listener now in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, thank you for calling, taking my call. I am calling about bone spurs. I recently had one about the size of a plum taken off of my left knee, and no sooner had that gotten better, I had three more come up on my foot, right where the tennis shoes tie. And I'm wondering what causes bone spurs. I'm still wearing a boot that I got at the hospital.
Yeah.
And it's taken, you know, 3 months, too long.
So on your knee, there was the physician removed the bone spur. Was it interfering with the movement of your knee?
No, it didn't interfere.
Uh-huh.
It was really bad, and it grew really fast. They grow, I mean, my right foot was flat and fine, mm-hmm. and I was over the knee replacement within 4 months,
mm-hmm.
and had to have those bone spurs taken off.
Uh-huh. But I want to. I'm just a little bit curious about this because you can have bone spurs, and we don't always operate on them when they're there. So we operate on them usually if there's something going on in addition to that pain or discomfort or function problems. Was this a bone spur that your doctor noticed and just said we should remove that?
Yes, I noticed it, and because it was right where the tennis shoes tie,
uh-huh.
it was very painful.
It was painful. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And I went back and had three times shots of so that I was able to walk. I guess
mm-hmm.
Novocaine.
Mm-hmm. Steroid, probably. Novocaine sometimes with some steroid in there, too.
Yes. Uh-huh. And then I finally said, let's go ahead and grind them off.
Sure.
Because it just happened to be right where the shoes tie.
Mm-hmm. You're doing better now?
No, it's – well, yeah, well, I've my primary care physician gave me an ACE bandage
mm-hmm.
and explained that it was like a capsule that had to grow back together, so or else I'd have to have another operation, and
mm-hmm.
I do not want to do that.
Of course. Nobody wants extra operations.
No one
ever comes into my office and says, gee, I want an operation. Can I do it?
So I've been keeping it wrapped tightly, and I hope it's getting better. I just wondered, I've heard it could be from not eating enough acidifying.
No, pretty much bone spurs are just, if you will, it's an offshoot of arthritis. That's really what, you know, what it's from. And so just like we can't really affect osteoarthritis, which is the arthritis of aging, we often can't affect bone spurs. The question, though, that I would have is if you still have pain after the surgery, you know, it's not getting any better, and if the ACE wrap conservative treatment doesn't work, anti-inflammatories, 2 Aleve tablets twice a day, that's naproxen, 2 Aleve tablets twice a day for about 4 to 6 weeks can get this thing to settle down, then I think I'd probably get a second opinion from somebody else to say, what is this and what can I do about it? I certainly wouldn't go back and have another surgery unless a second opinion said this is all we could do, because I kind of question why it's coming back, why it's coming back and growing. So that's
okay.
What I do. But I do the anti-inflammatories. 2 Aleve tablets twice a day, morning and evening, can make a difference.
Okay. And I wanted to tell you also, he prescribed meloxicam.
Just as good. That's a very good drug, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It does help a lot with the arthritis because I had a birthday, and since that birthday, and just 56, I had more pain from all these early injuries. And the hand is where the other injury, and he wants to do an operation. And I just
wants to do an operation on your hand?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't believe that I want to ever do that.
I think before you have any surgery of any sort, you need a second opinion from another surgeon, orthopedic surgeon, to see if it's necessary. I always like second opinions. And from what you told me, I think a second opinion is important before you have any other surgery. Okay.
Okay. And, I love your show, and I really do like my doc. I've seen him now for 16 years, and you have the same laugh, and he jokes. We both listen to your show regularly, and he tells me that you stone his laugh.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, you tell him he stole my laugh.
Yeah, I know.
You have a great day now. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much for that call. Before the break, Zorba, we love it when our listeners post on our Facebook page, so we scooped up a few of these questions and comments and would like to share them with you today. First, Jeff in Missouri writes, "We used to have a little fast food shop in University City, Missouri, called Zorba the Greeks. We totally unfairly referred to it as Absorba the Grease."
That's funny.
Next,
that's funny.
Cheryl in Horicon, Wisconsin asks, "Zorba, would you please recommend a good Mediterranean diet cookbook?"
Uh-huh. Well, I think there are lots of them out there. What I would recommend doing, I know this is a revolutionary recommendation, go to a bookstore. Shocking as it is,
I bet you can find a bookstore.
You can find them. They're around, especially in big cities. And go to the cookbook section and browse the cookbooks and pick up a Mediterranean diet cookbook that you like. There's so many out there. You want to find one with the photos and the pictures and the way you have it. There's no one good one. There are many good ones.
Question now, Zorba, from John in Wisconsin. Hi, Zorba. You mentioned taking aspirin as a preventative. Do you prefer low dose or full strength? Thanks, and keep picking on Tom.
Well, if we pick on Tom, that has to be full strength. But I think low dose aspirin is just fine. 81 milligrams. That's perfect.
And finally, Zorba, this one's for me. Deb in Eau Claire writes, "Tom Clark, I don't have a cell phone either. It's nice to be incommunicado sometimes, isn't it?" Yes, is the answer.
I love it. I love it. Keep those emails coming through Facebook. ZorbaPastor.org. You can send us an email, or, of course, you can do it through Facebook. Mm-hmm. We love it.
Interesting topic to talk about. That's coming up next. More of your calls, of course, our medical myth buster. Plenty of good reasons for you to stay with us on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again, 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before we're back to the phones, let's talk about that huge study which cast doubt on the value of mammograms.
Right, right. So first of all, let's look at the study itself. Huge study, very well controlled. It's gone out 25 years. 90,000 women in Canada. The women were compliant. The follow-ups were good. So the study is a dynamite study. Half the women basically received mammograms on a regular basis and half did not. They looked at the death rates. There was no difference in the death rates for the women getting mammograms and the women who did not get mammograms. The death rate was exactly
That's so counterintuitive because you get the mammogram in order not to die.
Right. Well, with the earlier, we have to look at this. Now, there are two other things. First of all, they looked at whether or not the mammogram will pick up cancers before we can actually detect them. But the difference in the cancers between before a woman can detect them and what the mammogram picked up was 2 millimeters. 2 millimeters. That's tiny. That's like a tenth of less than a tenth of an inch. It's very, very small. Then they looked at, what's wrong with screening? Well, it turned out that 1 out of 4 women who actually received a positive mammogram and a biopsied were biopsied for cancers that we don't think need to be treated. There's something called DCIS, ductal carcinoma in situ, which we call cancer, but many researchers, and this is controversial, say it's really not cancer, it's precancer. And these women get radiation and they get chemo after that. Now, here's the other thing. The studies that were done showing the value of mammography were done before we had the major drug tamoxifen that came out. And tamoxifen, which is an anti-estrogen drug, has been dynamite in helping women who have cancers. So this is throwing into question the value of mammography. And it's very messy. It's very controversial. But we can't ignore the study because it's a great study, 90,000 women 25 years out.
Yeah. Well, I've heard others talk about this, other physicians and commentators, saying this is just one study, and so you probably should keep on taking, or you can use your own judgment. That's very murky.
It's messy. Science is messy. Yes, it is one study, but it's no other study is 25 years out. No other study has 90,000 women. And the reason why we did mammograms are these are studies that were older studies that actually weren't as good.
Yeah.
In other words, the reason why we do mammogram has to do with old research. This is dynamite new research.
Now, I bet you can't issue these words out of your lips. Don't get a mammogram.
Oh, no. I wouldn't issue that.
Well, wait, here's a study that says
I think this is where science looks at information and then starts to look at other information and then decide. For instance, we now know that anti-inflammatory drugs cause heart attacks, so we don't give them anymore. We now may find out that we're not using mammograms as much as we used to. The jury is in, but the verdict is not yet clear.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba. We welcome a listener in Marquette, Michigan. Hi.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure, what's up?
My mother has a problem with earwax, and sometimes it gets so bad that she can barely hear herself talk, let alone hear anyone else speak. So I was wondering if the ear vacuum that you see advertised on television is a safe and effective tool that could be used for her.
Ear vacuum.
Yeah.
Now, I must admit, at 3 o'clock in the morning, if I'm awake, I don't go to the television set to look at the infomercials about ear vacuum.
Oh, I've seen those.
I can't believe it. Have you actually seen the ear vacuum thing on television?
Yeah.
What time of day? Late at night.
It wasn't late at night.
Yeah, right. What she really needs, some people produce more wax. Why is it? Ask me why that is.
Why is it?
We don't know. No one's been able to figure it out. But some people are wax producers and some are not. As we get older, the wax tends to be drier because everything is drier. We tend to dry out like a prune as we get older. So one of the ways to do it is, first of all, when you've got to clean out the ear initially. So you clean it out by putting ear wax removal drops. These are low-density oils that go in the ear and basically are penetrating oil, work in the ear, and then you can flush the ear yourself with an earwax removal kit. It has a little bulb syringe. Yeah. Lukewarm water. If it's hot or cold, it'll make you dizzy. Or you go to a doctor's office.
You've heard me say this before, and you think I'm nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I use that syringe thing every time I'm in the shower.
Yeah. So that's the other, I never
get any buildup.
But
that's
the other issue. The other issue is what Tom is saying. Once you get the wax out, what you do is you just start to syringe out your ears on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Now, Tom does it in the shower, and which is fine. Whenever he showers, he does it in the shower.
I shower. I've never heard you complain. We're in close proximity.
Tom does it once a week when he showers. But you could do it on a regular basis. You could do it once every day, or you could do it once a week or once a month. And a lot of people, if they have earwax that builds up, then once a month they put the drops in their ears for a day, and then they use the removal kit and get rid of it. And that's the way to really stay on top of it. I think I would stay away from the vacuum, because if it's dry wax, I don't think it's going to come out. Because we then flush out people's ears in our office, and when their wax is dry, it fails. It just doesn't work. You've got to moisten up the wax to be able to get it out. How old is your mom?
86.
Yeah, so she's got dry wax. Has she had this her whole life or just recently?
Off and on, but more recently it's been a problem.
Yeah, so she can't hear herself sometimes. Does she have a hearing problem too? Does she need a hearing aid?
No, she doesn't.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes it sounds like she's talking in a barrel. It just gets ringing, but then it gets progressive so that she can't hear anything.
Yeah. When was the last time she had her ears irrigated at her doc's office?
Well, she was in the hospital recently, and so she had them flushed. She was getting drops in her ears every day and then flushed on a couple occasions.
Right. So on a couple occasions. That means that she had dry wax. Yeah. So I'd go for the drops. I'd stay away from the vacuum. And don't watch that late night TV anymore.
And you said an earwax removal kit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're on there. Murine makes one. They're the eye drop people. There are a lot of generic ones. Go to the pharmacist. You want a kit because it's got the little bulb syringe in there. You know, and then you want to do it on a regular basis to keep it from building up, because then your mom's hearing is going to be better, and she's going to chronically have this, so just attend to it.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Take
care.
Appreciate
the call. Thank you very much. 1-800-462-7413. Toll free. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, medical mythbuster time now. And today's myth comes to us from Rhonda, listening in Detroit, Michigan. She writes, "Dear Zorba and Tom, I love your show, but could you please settle a dispute I have with my sister? Whenever she sneezes, she pinches her nose. I think she believes that doing this will stifle the volume of such a nasal blast. I keep telling her, unless she's doing the swim dance,
she shouldn't
be pinching her nose like that. Of course, she disagrees.
It's
so,
your
Doc,
sister.
Is this practice harmful?"
The swim dance. Well, first of all, I want to set the record straight. Full disclosure, my wife pinches her nose when she sneezes.
Oh, really?
Okay. Full disclosure. First of all, I don't think it's harmful. I think it's a myth that it's harmful. But second of all, could I go against my wife when this is her habit? I mean, as I said, it's full disclosure. I've got vested interest in this.
Yeah.
But I've looked it up because I always said, my mother always said, no, if you hold your nose, you blow your brains out. Right. I mean, clearly you don't blow your brains out. But, you know, there is a purpose behind a sneeze, and it's usually to get the stuff out of the nose.
Yeah.
And so why would you want to pinch the nose? But believe me, we've been married for nearly 40 years, and I've never managed to get her to stop. She's not going to get her sister to stop.
It would be so uncomfortable, I would think.
Yeah, you know what?
Hold your nose when
you have to sneeze. People do what people do.
Have a myth for us? Zorba is happy to bless you with an answer. Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. On we go, Zorba, welcoming a listener now in Two Rivers, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
I've had some bursitis in my hips, both my hips, for the past year or so. I've tried some steroid injections, which work, but it keeps coming back. So I'm looking for some ways to prevent it from coming back so I can maybe get rid of the injections. I like to be active. I like to run, or maybe jog, you'd call it. And I like to bike, but right now that's kind of sidelined. But I'm wondering if there's some things I can do to help myself get back to those things.
Uh-huh.
I'd even take brisk walking.
So you've had, how long have you had bursitis for?
Probably maybe a little more than a year.
Uh-huh. And how many injections have you had?
I'm going out. I just had a third one.
Okay.
So you've had, and now the other side's working. one,
by the way, do the injections do anything? Do they help at all?
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know. Maybe I just try to do too much. So I'm thinking maybe I need to do something.
Well, that's a good question. Have you gone, by the way, have you had any physical therapy at all?
Yeah, I did. It kind of helped, but I ended up with injections again.
Okay. So in other words, so you had some physical therapy and the results were so-so. Have you taken any over-the-counter, anti-inflammatories, ibuprofen or Aleve?
Yes, and they kind of help. The injections do the trick usually, so then I only take it when it bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay. Well, there are a couple of things. Bursitis, bursa is really a fat pad, and it's between muscle and bone, and it's designed in our body to sort of, ease things around. So, to sort of pad things. And what happens is when it gets inflamed, what often happens is a blood vessel may break, irritate the fat pad, and it becomes very inflamed and very uncomfortable. And will often happen acutely, either directly or intermittently, can be, a real problem as a chronic problem. And so injections work. They're steroid injections, but you don't want to keep on having injections because you're going in there, once or twice. Once you get to three or four, it can be problematic. The ways to treat it in a non-problematic way can include some physical therapy. If one therapist doesn't work, I recommend going to another one. Sometimes you'll find the right type of exercise. TENS unit, TENS. A TENS unit is an electrical unit that physical therapists can put on. Insurance usually covers, and sometimes just wearing a TENS unit does something. It's sort of like electrical acupuncture, if you want to think of it that way. It can be very effective for some people. Pilates.
Oh, okay.
Pilates can be very good because you're using your muscles, your ligaments, your nerves. You're stretching them out in a different way. So you might want to consider Pilates and yoga. Yoga okay. is a final thing. And these are all sort of non-pharmacological ways of dealing with it. Now, if that fails, I would go on some Aleve, two Aleve tablets twice a day, over-the-counter generic, not name brand. I would take two Aleve twice a day for 6 to 8 weeks. Just see if you could just take an anti-inflammatory for a long period of time, can you get it to settle down? But I think I'd go the non-pharmacological route first, like I said, because clearly this is a chronic problem. On the other hand, it may have been from a broken blood vessel, and if you can just get over that peak of that, your body might cure itself.
Okay, great. I like yoga, so I'll give that a try.
Right, and make sure you do the right stretches. You want a yoga instructor that you can talk to, because if you do the wrong stretches, you will hurt. And if you do the right stretches, it will improve.
Okay.
Thank you
so much. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for your call and thanks for listening.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Thank you. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. And before we head out, Zorba, time now to hear from a lesser-known division of the grammar police, the Pastafarians.
The Pastafarians.
This week's okay. correction comes from Phil of Madison, Wisconsin. He writes, "Dear Zorba, on the show, you often refer to pasta as being done El Dante, as in Dante's Inferno. The correct pronunciation is El Dente, which is literally translated from Italian to mean to the tooth, as in dental. I assure you, I know this is a small detail dwarfed by my obsessive compulsion to bring it to your attention. Thanks. I love your show, and I listen every week."
I have to tell you, I was giving a lecture in Milwaukee, speaking at a senior citizen place. Really wonderful people. They were great. There were not one, not two, but three people came up to me to correct grammar. Not on my lecture, but on the show. They said, "I've been meaning to tell you this for a long time, but I didn't want to embarrass you. It's like this and that. It's my first language. You know, I'm going to say, next time I do spaghetti, I'm not going to say al dente, al dante. I'm going to say, keep it nice and firm. You decide how to pronounce it."
Listeners, a penny for your thoughts. Post your thoughts to Facebook or send them along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org, or don't forget Facebook.
And you can call us anytime at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Master Fade Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0315Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.